But what are we talking with Kevin about?
Talking about Kevin about what he does and children's theater.
So everything we've been talking about, we've not been recording.
Well,
okay.
Well, we've been recording some of it, but that's the random chatter that we do beforehand. Okay. Because we like the random chatter.
No, we don't.
Well, because it's good because we embarrass Marcia with it then later. See,
I'm trying my best not to embarrass Marcia anymore.
No, you better not.
Uh-oh. Okay.
He did once.
I guess I'll have to take up that mantle. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to episode 28 of Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. This is episode 28, but it is also the first episode of 2011.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! Right. And we are really, it's like, did you think this would last a year when we started this?
Has it been,
it feels like a year? It feels like a year.
Whoa.
Sure.
Yeah. It feels like a year, but it was one of those things that when we first started, I wasn't sure we were going to actually.
Yeah.
You know, I thought, well, okay, we'll try this and we'll see if when you don't poke each other's eyes out in 6 months, then maybe it'll last. But that was just kind of when we haven't. So it's been fun and we've enjoyed bringing it to you. Tell all your friends, tell your neighbors, bring in the kids, make sure the dog listens and all that kind of stuff. And maybe maybe we can try to build audience this year. And I'm going to start off. We have one thing we're going to start with. We have a special guest with us today, which is Kevin Reese, a strange visitor from the far west who used to be one of our Elkhart local performers and has now gone on to something very interesting, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the first thing is, it is the new year. People make New Year's resolutions, you know, to lose weight, to make, to be nicer to their spouse or something along those lines. So I thought maybe we could start with, is there a New Year's resolution, a theater New Year's resolution that maybe we could throw out there and at least, for them, for yourself or just to kind of make as a suggestion.
Well, Dave, since this is your idea, what is your New Year's resolution?
My New Year's resolution.
Set that up.
That's the only reason I brought it up is because I already had one.
Of course.
My New Year's resolution is to see more theater. And that's something that I think because I get so involved in the theater that we do at our home theater, and I also don't get out to see a lot of other stuff beyond what we do, and I think it's important that I do that. And I always encourage the students that I teach at IUSB, it's the same, same thing, see other things, and yet somehow something always gets in the way for me to do it. So I'm going to try to do better in that regard in the upcoming year.
I think it's a great idea.
Well, it's important, I think.
You should do that too, John.
I wish I could get out.
Community theater is, and even if it's, and seeing professional as well as community theater. Community theater is pretty variable stuff, as some of it's very good and some of it is, maybe not quite so good. But it's still good. It's good to see that variability, I think, because, if you're involved in community theater yourself, you have something to compare what your work is against. And it's not a matter of, either being in awe of something else or making fun of it. It's a matter of saying, okay, you always learn from seeing other performances, I think. So, and especially if it's something that's a little outside your own realm. So, and of course, professional theater is almost always instructive. So it's good.
Yeah, you can good sit idea. Around and go, how did they do that?
Yeah, or how did they do that? Or you can say, I'd like to know how they did that because maybe we can apply that to our theater. And if we can't, how close can we get? We do that all
Dream
the time,
on,
right?
David.
Well, we can't fly Peter Pan, but gee, maybe we could do cardboard.
We could throw them in the air. Know,
they use 10 smart lights in that. I wonder how I can use 2 follow spots and a Fresnel.
There you go.
And get the same effect.
Anyone else? Anyone else have
Marcia, do you have one?
Do I have one? No, I never make resolutions. No. I really don't. I'm sorry because I found in the past that I break them too easily, and then I really feel guilty, and I don't need any more guilt to follow me through the next year.
Except, the thing is, Marcia, we know Marcia to be practically perfect in every way.
Exactly.
To coin a phrase.
Exactly. Just like Mary Poppins.
Just like Mary Poppins.
Yeah. And don't you wish I had an umbrella?
and you could fly away. Yeah, that's right.
This is or beat people down. I'm not sure.
One, it would be to try and see more good theater.
Okay. And
sometimes that is not possible.
And she looks right at me when she says that, and I'm not
that
sure
is,
why.
Sometimes that is not possible. But I agree with you. Seeing more community theater absolutely gives you some kind of a standard to judge what you do, you know? And it's easier. It's easier. Then you won't come out of something that's really crappy and say, wow, that was really good, because you'll know it wasn't.
That's right. That's true. That's true. It gives you a little bit more of a just a higher standard to work against. Well, there you go.
Okay, John.
So Marcia and I agree, John.
Oh, my God.
For the first time in a year, maybe.
Yeah. Yes.
And so there you go.
That's good. No, and I agree with you, too. So all three of us.
Isn't that wonderful?
I think since I was just kind of hit with this just a few minutes ago, but I think my New Year's resolution is going to be something that I've been striving for the last couple of years, which is to be more positive when delivering notes to my casts. It's really easy to get caught up in the negative and forget that actors need to hear positive reinforcement. And so I think that's something that I'm going to try to do much more of this year, is positive reinforcement. Not necessarily just with my casts, but maybe also with the people that I come in contact with. Sometimes I can, negative. I know, but sometimes, you know, you get so caught up in the negative of it that you forget that some to be positive sometimes can have just as much of an effect on people as being negative. So
I'm positive. You're doing that wrong. That's what I say.
So I'm looking up this year. I'm looking up, everybody.
Yeah,
let's shoot for the stars, catch the moon.
Okay, let's move.
Well, it is hard to give. Just to follow up on that a little bit. It is hard. In notes as a director, it's very hard to give notes, because that is what you're focusing on, is the stuff that needs to be fixed, and it's easy to forget that actors need to know when they're doing it right. You know, even if no comment means they're probably doing it right, they like to hear you're doing it right. So that's true. Okay,
so there. That's my resolution.
There we go.
Moving on.
Well, anyway,
more
I'd
important
like to,
people to talk to.
First of all, say Happy New Year to all of you out there in theater geek land, and we hope that you have a good 2011, and I hope that it's starting off well, starting with this episode of Theater Geeks. Our guest today is Kevin Reese. And Kevin is a playwright. He is a former member of our local theater troupe, and he played Curly in the production of Oklahoma a few years ago. And today he lives near Wichita, Kansas. It's a suburb, is Valley Center. But you are a writer of plays, and you essentially you sell and license your own plays as well, and largely aimed at what market?
Children.
Children, okay. So for children's theater, for adults to perform and adults and children both to perform. So, and you've been doing, how long have you been doing this now?
Almost 20 years.
Yeah, okay.
My first show was in 93.
Okay, all right. And what was that first show?
I had a bunch of them open that first year, but Little Red Riding Hood was my first big show.
Okay, and those are all of them musicals, or do all of them have music in them? I guess maybe a musical is just because there's a song doesn't mean it's a musical, but right. it can be a musical depending on the structure.
When I first write a show, depending on what theater I'm writing it for, generally they want a musical, and I specialize in musicals, plays and musicals for very young audiences, 2 to 8 year olds.
Okay.
So their attention spans are smaller than older kids. So my shows are generally 30, 35 minutes to about 40, 45 minutes.
Right, right.
And they'll have anywhere from 3 to 8, 9 songs in them.
Okay. And you also do, because you're a musician, you do the soundtracks as well. You provide soundtracks on CD or something like that.
Right.
Yeah. And so this is fascinating to me, because I keep thinking, okay, now how do you know what's going to work with kids? Do you get that from your performing background, or do you get that from just, you know, you've thrown maybe a play or two out there that hasn't worked, and you've gone back, do you workshop them in essence in some ways, or how do you determine a play that's going to work well for kids? What is Here, okay, let me give you a question. I'm throwing out too many questions.
Jeez,
here. I guess the main question: what is it that makes a play right for kids, or what are the things that make it right for kids?
An engaging story, engaging actor or engaging characters performed by actors who can relate to kids.
Mm-hmm.
In the shows that I do, I provide a director's script, and it's got some casting ideas in them. And generally, I tell them I'd much prefer someone who can relate to kids and play with kids over someone who's a wonderful actor and can't relate to kids.
Oh, okay.
The important thing is that they're down there playing with the kids, not performing at the kids.
Okay. You said it depend upon who you were writing for. Do you get commissions to write a particular show for a particular group?
No. My process, and it's different with every playwright, my process is I have a list of stories that I want to write. And the theaters that are my regular customers, they'll say, do you have anything new coming down? I say, well, I've got these stories that I'm thinking about. Aside from the ones that are already published.
Yeah.
The most recent one was The Little Boy Who Cried Wolf. And the theater said, oh, yeah, let's do that one. And so after I talked with them, I need a year from the time that they say, yeah, we'll do it, to the time that they're planning on producing it. In that year, my process is the first 6 months is research to find out why there needs to be another version of that story out there somewhere, because there are millions of them already. And once I figure that out, then I take about 3 months to get my studio ready, I get all my software and everything ready, and during that time I'm formulating the plot structure and the characters and all that kind of stuff. And the actual writing usually takes anywhere from 1 month to there are a couple shows that I've done in a weekend.
Oh, wow.
And then that is one of the final drafts. The final draft is what I give them to read, and then they give their notes, and if they have any questions, if they have an actor they want that doesn't sing that well, then I tune their songs down, that kind of thing. But I'm not really give and take in my process. I write, what I write is what they produce. So I'm not open for changes during the rehearsal process, because I've done this long enough that I know this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And it does. Uh-huh.
Right.
But
yeah.
But again, it's my style of theater, which is, and I try to write it, you know, it's intelligent stuff. It's not, I don't write SpongeBob SquarePants, you know, butt kicks and that kind of stuff. It's, you know, there's a plot.
I love butt kicks. Darn it.
Oh, God damn it.
Everybody loves slapstick.
Yeah. Not everyone.
But it's not necessarily good theater.
Not everyone.
Or it's not the steady diet you need.
Right.
Do you write any for children to be in, or is it all adult actors performing for young people?
The original productions are always adult professional actors performing for kids. All of my shows have been done by kids as young as 8 as actors.
Okay.
The if you look through one of my scripts, it's very, the language is, you know, second, third grade. There's no occult concepts in there. It's a pretty simple plot line. There are no huge, because the shows are only 35, 40 minutes long, they're not huge parts. So a lot of children's theaters around the country will do my shows using kids performing.
How did you get them out there to other groups around the country initially? The internet. Okay.
I was one of the first play publishers to have a website. And so in KMR Scripts, my company, was established in 93, and 97 is when I first went on the internet.
Wow.
And so I had a website, and at that time, I didn't have shopping cart, but people could see, I had lots of pictures and samples of the songs, and so they could contact me over the phone, and then we'd do business that way.
Did you get a good response initially from that?
I gave a lot of scripts away.
Did you? It takes a while to build up so the people know.
there are
you know,
a lot of
how you write and what you write. Kind of.
There are a lot of people out there that I've got this great story that I and so you want to put it on.
Yeah.
Well, let's see what you got. you send out a lot most of my customers are repeat customers. I have some theaters like the Wichita Children's Theater does 10 to 12 of my shows a year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good, Kev.
Well, do you?
That is good.
But their style of theater is my style of theater.
Yeah.
So they and we're real simpatico on almost every concept of what the elements in the plays, audience participation, the style of music, the shortness of the songs.
The majority of your plays based on existing like folk tales, fairy tales, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, probably 80% are traditional fairy tales, Little Riding Hood, Jack and the Beanstalk.
Right.
I've got a few that are original stories, Cuddle Bears and Toyland and that kind of stuff. But the older I get, the older my kids get, I'm starting to do things like Tom Sawyer, Alice mm-hmm. in Wonderland.
Oh yeah.
So
your training would allow you to basically probably write any kind of theater that you would like. It sounds like after having talked with you and your education background, and I mean, you could probably write whatever. Why did you decide to settle? And I shouldn't say settle. What made you come to youth theater or children's theater? Because they're all valid.
Sure.
Why this style?
My background. My training was in acting and musical theater performance. So I did the typical gypsy actor for about 5 years after graduate school, and then I landed a touring job at the Wichita Children's Theater back in the late 80s, and I just fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
To be on a stage in a gym in a library floor, performing for 2,000 in one place, the whole school, 75 kids, another place, and to be able to do the same play every day, sometimes three times a day for 3 months, and just fine tune the performance of that work just opened my eyes on what you can do, and so I fell in love with children's theater. Mm-hmm. And then when I started writing, because I was writing working at the Wichita Children's Theater in Kansas, that's what I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a kid. Just a big kid, and
yeah.
my wife will attest to that. My kids will attest to that.
Well, it seems to me that it's important that we give young people a viable theater experiences. The younger, the better. And did you find that as you were working with Wichita that there was a lack also of decent material out there for youth theater? I don't want to call it youth theater because it's not, but for theater for younger viewers.
Mm-hmm. We used to do a lot of, Samuel French carries them, or Tams Whitmark, I think, carries them, the Prince Street Players. They have
Music Theater International.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have one, those were the first plays that I ever did for children's theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then we did them, and we were looking for others along that vein. The problem is that we had a specific format that the theater worked at. We wanted the shows under an hour. Small cast because it was a touring show. They didn't want to hire a lot of actors. Simple tech requirements, and the actors were also the ones that did all the tech work. So they had to an actor had to be backstage to turn the tape recorder on for the soundtrack.
Yeah,
young performers. So those were
yeah.
So any show that we did, we had to adapt that show to those requirements. Well, after 3 years, and I got into I was the tour manager of the theater after a couple years, and then I got into producing and directing too. And so I was trying to find the plays for all the seasons, and it got to the point where it'd just be easier to start from scratch.
Yeah,
because I mean, right. you take these
because you, yeah. you it's interesting when you understand how to write when you know how rustic the technical situation can be with some theaters, and write so that so it's easy to do a show technically, or where you say, I know that it's going to be an actor going backstage in the tape recorder or whatever it is. You know, that's you get quite good at that, and yet the plays aren't written for that. Mm-hmm. You know, so yeah, it's cool that's kind of a direction you can go. Yeah,
some of the Prince Street Players plays were written for 15, 20, 25 actors, big choruses and stuff, and we were trying to do them with 4, 5, 6 actors. And so we got real good at cutting and pasting and stuff. Everything that now I would sue somebody for doing into one of my plays. Right. So I learned.
Just make that clear.
There's white noise going on right now, so nobody really heard what Kevin just said about what they used to do.
That's the limitations. Yeah.
Well, you said you take a year to set up and get something written. Are you able to write more than one thing in a year? I mean, during that time period, is your brain working on more than one project at a time?
The reason I started writing plays is because we started having kids, and we wanted someone home to, and so I was a stay-at-home parent and doing this. My first season of writing, we had a 1-year-old at home. And I wrote 8 plays that first year.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
I still have to marvel at the producer. She printed the program for the year, the brochure, and put dates down for all the plays, and they weren't even conceived yet.
Just the title is all it was.
I had one good musical, Little Red Riding Hood, which is by far and away my best-selling one anyway. But and then, you know, we wanted... Goldilocks and the Three Bears was in that season, Cinderella, the Gingerbread Man.
Wow.
So we spaced it out. And so, and I was still touring then too. So I would be out on the road. And those touring actors were also the ones we were using for that series. So we'd be touring for 2 weeks, and then we'd have a weekend off. So we'd come back and do a show there at the theater. Then we'd go back on tour. And I can't believe I didn't have a heart attack during all that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there were plenty of times when I was still writing 15 minutes before we were supposed to start rehearsals for that show.
Oh, awesome. Gosh. Oh, yeah.
But I think that kind of creative process could be, like, really energizing, too. So, it'd be
a lot of
fun. I always
did my best term papers, you know, the night
on
before.
Deadline. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I was
me, too.
Was wondering, too, now, in terms of the market for the scripts, do you sell to schools at all? Are schools a market at all? Or is it largely more dedicated children's theater enthusiasts?
The majority of my customers are children's theaters.
Okay.
That have a program and they have a core actors that do them. They've been done by junior high schools.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a couple classes that did it.
Right.
There are some, my show's been done all over the world. There was an English class in Greece that wanted to do a play in English, so they did it. And
wow,
cool. Yeah, that's neat.
It's very good. And there's a fella in Switzerland that I met over the internet, and he runs a tent theater in St. Gallen, Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And so every year he takes one of my plays and he translates it into the Swiss dialect of German, and he presents it there for.
Wow.
For a couple weeks in a
wow.
tent.
Kind of cool. Have you been over to see it?
No. It's a bit expensive, but he always sends me a video. And it's very
neat.
Cool. You know, I know my songs, but the words that are coming out of those people's mouths are not, but it's my music, and it's
neat,
very cool.
Neat.
Do you get? Do you retain the royalty rights then for the version that's in German? I shouldn't have asked that question.
No.
I was just curious.
Well, maybe I'll tell you later.
Okay.
I'm a member of the Dramatists Guild, and they have very fine legal support. And every time I was with them, they were saying, don't get anywhere near this. Because of it's a quagmire of who owns it, who protects it.
Oh, I mean, when you get international?
Yeah.
And when you get international, when you get into translations, you know, the translation of my script is copyrightable by whoever translated
it.
Oh, no kidding.
It's a derivative of,
And especially since you're doing a classic story, which has no copyright to start with, right?
Yeah, but he's using my adaptation, which is copyrighted.
Okay, gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It's, yeah, but I just really liked the fella.
Yeah. Well, no, that's great.
His name
great,
is David
yeah.
Geary, and he's just a wonderful, delightful fella. And he, I had seen a video of something he'd done before from something else, and it was good. And I just liked the concept of what he was doing, so I let him do it once.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out wonderfully. I mean, from the video, and the kids in the audience yep. were having a great time. And so it's kind of a pet project. It's hard to be.
I mean, when you're doing something that you love, which is obviously this, and someone else wants to share that and be part of it, you know, your tendency is to want to do it, even if there may be some risks involved. I would think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Do your kids ever have their own ideas of what they'd like you to write? Do you get requests for stories from your children?
From my children?
Yeah.
No, because they understand that I do. I mean, they're voracious readers with today's stuff, and they understand copyrights and all that kind of stuff. So they know that I would never do that.
But they wouldn't come to you with like, say, "Dad, you should do
Huck Finn or something
Finn or an old or an, you know, one of the older stories that they would know might be out of copyright."
No, they're getting to the point now where the high school that my younger son goes to is doing an evening of one acts, and one of them is one of my plays, and it's The Little Boy Who Cried Wolf, and the main character's name is Nicholas, and I do that all the time. I'll put my kids
put
and their
kids'
friends
names
and,
in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so he's playing Nicholas.
Oh, that's
so.
Oh, yeah.
So my kids are saying, "I can't wait till I get to be in that play."
Are a hero in your own home.
Interestingly, yeah. You mentioned it's a one act. Now, do you ever do? Are all of your plays one acts, or are there one act? Is it in a 45-minute play for kids? Do you put a intermission in there?
No.
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 They're not like little old ladies who can't wait to get to the ladies' room.
The longest play I have is A Christmas Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And it has an optional intermission in it, but it's the running time with that, and it's got traditional Christmas carols in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think the running time of that is 70 minutes. And then my Alice in Wonderland is a longer show. I think it's about 55 minutes. Hmm. But the rest of them are all 35, 40 minutes long.
Yeah. Okay.
We're having dead silence.
We're having
here.
Dead silence.
And I need to say my name is Kevin Reese. That's who my wife married. And when I'm performing, I'm Kevin Reese. But as a playwright, I'm Kevin M. Reese.
Oh, okay.
Because there's another Kevin Reese out there writing. I'm
Kevin
in the Drama
M.
Guild.
Kevin M. Reese.
No
oh, okay,
kidding.
I gotcha.
Isn't it amazing? There's another Marcia Fulmer somewhere, too, I found out.
Really?
That's kind of shocking.
How dare you?
Is she reviewing?
No.
See, the other Kevin no. Reese is also writing.
Oh, you're kidding!
Yeah. I know John Chaup because there's another John Chaup. I actually worked for another.
Really?
Yeah. I actually worked for John Chaup. To the point where this in the studio with us today is John Chaup the younger. I used to work for John Chaup the elder, who is no relation or a very distant relation.
I think we're fourth cousins.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway.
I always say he lives in Middlebury, got all the money. I live in Elkhart and am poor. So there we go.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, well, it's been a pleasure to have you with us today. We're going to close out this episode of Theater Geeks. Please remember to visit the Theater Geeks store at theatergeeks.com.
It's been so long.
Store.
Yeah.
That's right. And remember to also, by the way, we also have a special deal on audiobooks from audible.com. If you go to the Theater Geeks store, you can click on the deal. And I think it's a free book if you subscribe to audible.com. And so check that out. And thanks again to Kevin Reese. Kevin M. Reese, the playwright from, and we will have a link to Kevin's website on the show notes on the website, by the way. And please come back for the next episode. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Chaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.